Welcome to Take the Forest Path podcast. This is the place for unique and creative guided meditations, as well as the exploration of various topics on the journey to our true selves and our true purpose. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's podcast discussion. So today I am discussing the heroine's journey with my really good friend and colleague, Bella Combest, who is also a certified Jungian life coach. And I'm doing a little introduction first because we doubled this talk as a Facebook Live for her private group. And so you'll see that as we start talking, she is actually going to introduce me first, and then I introduce her, and then we continue with the discussion. So without any further ado, here is our discussion on the heroine's journey. Enjoy.
Welcome you all to a really amazing conversation that I'm having with my really good friend, Dr. Kat, who is an incredible Jungian coach, as well as a naturopathic doctor who specializes in helping people recover from burnout. And this is my first podcast recording. This is not her first. So she was generous enough to let us use it for both of our kind of audiences. Kind of on my side, we've been talking in the group. It's really about the dark feminine. And so this week was really a requested topic. So I thought, what a good opportunity for us to chat together all about the dark feminine and the heroine's journey and how those things are such transformative frameworks for us to really become the creatrixes of our lives.
Yes. Thank you so much.
I'll hand it over to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for being on this podcast and also for having me on the live. It kind of is perfect that it worked out this way. Yeah. So this is something that we actually connected on, I think is like the heroine's journey, hero's journey, dark feminine. And so for my podcast, I'm going to introduce you. So this is my good friend and colleague, Bella Combest, and she is a trauma-informed transformation coach and a shadow guide. So she works in the world of archetypes and alchemy, all that cool stuff, where chaos becomes a tool for creation and destruction, births new life. So she specializes in helping women awaken their fierce feminine and answer their greatest calling. And I actually took one of her courses about the heroine's journey last year, and I absolutely loved it. And so that was one reason that I wanted to reach out to you actually, and specifically to talk about the dark feminine and the heroine's journey, because you helped me so much with that last year. And I loved that program. I recommend it to so many people. And so I'm just so excited. I know that this is such a deep topic. And so I feel like we're probably just going to delve deep into a few things, but there's so much to it. And I think we're just going to have an awesome discussion about it today.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Me too. So there are a couple resources I wanted to throw out. And for on my podcast, I'll have these down below if anybody's interested. But Bella actually recommended this book to me. It's called The Heroine's Journey by Maureen Murdoch. So we are going to talk about a lot of the stuff that she references in here. And then also another book called Maiden to Mother. Do you remember who wrote that book?
Sarah Durham Wilson.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Also a fabulous book. And they talk about a lot of the same stories too that they have to do with the heroine's journey. So those are two sort of references. But to start us off, actually, would you mind kind of briefly talking about what the heroine's journey even is?
Yeah. So the heroine's journey is a pattern that we see in literature and mythology that spans back generations across every age of humanity, across cultures around the world. We see this particular pattern kind of arise out of our storytelling as humans. And what we've seen is that the process of transformation is really reflected in this storyline. And so it became a real tool for a lot of psycho-spiritual and healers and change makers to kind of draw from in order to see how we can ourselves transform in the ways that these stories have really reflected on us. And I can give you the steps itself, but I'm also wondering if there's a bit of backstory here that I'd love to touch on, which was kind of how I found the heroine's journey. So it kind of bears maybe a little bit of a story. And I think our backstories are a little bit connected around this. So I'd love to, to hear.
And we love stories. So I definitely want to hear.
I guess that this is, our kind of more relating part is like, I grew up as a pastor's daughter who was deeply, deeply afraid of hell and darkness and the devil and things bad. My worldview was very like black and white. And it was a very masculine kind of patriarchal paradigm that I lived in. You know, there was no feminine energy. There was, at least not in an exalted form outside of like Mary, the mother of Jesus. But besides that, it was a very masculine, very scary version of Christianity that I grew up in. And so as someone who kind of naturally had some more melancholy to me, a little bit more darkness in my personality, I know Kat and I have really connected on a personality framework called the Enneagram. And if you're familiar with it, both Kat and I are Enneagram type fours. And the fours are like kind of the lover of the shadow, of darkness. They have this like interest in the unseen and the mystery, but they can also get kind of stuck in hopelessness and despair. And so I had this like feeling of darkness that I carried with me all the time. And I didn't have any understanding about what it was. And I thought that it was literally like the devil inside of me and that I wasn't saved. And it just felt like a really crushing existence to live in. And then obviously having a patriarchal God that was extremely harsh and, you know, male, masculine. So when I, you know, kind of fast forward, when I was getting into more personal development and spiritual work, I was hungry for a different kind of relationship with myself and with God and with spirit that had more aspects of the feminine to it, that had more reflected of myself and my journey. And I couldn't find it very many places. Like a lot of the stuff that I was looking into still felt pretty masculine. Like it was a lot about mindset and it was a lot about kind of controlling your feelings and kind of mastering your emotions. And it still felt really like conquering and not what I was looking for, but it still perpetuated a feeling that I was wrong and bad for being this very emotional, like very mystical kind of dark person. I know I don't look it, but I have an inner goth girl who lives with me. She's very strong. And there was a lot of love and light in that kind of personal development world and space and psychology. It was a lot about like positive psychology and stuff. And I felt like there just wasn't a place for me there. Like I just felt almost implicitly rejected by those frameworks. And it wasn't until I kind of hit a really, really deep low, a rock bottom in my kind of every category of my life. My marriage was falling apart. I was in a career I hated. I had friends that I didn't really align with. I didn't feel close to anymore. So I just felt like a husk of a person. And it was kind of in this place after I had accomplished so much in the outer world. You know, I had climbed to the top of, I was in communications consulting and was advising really big political figures in Colorado and had climbed this, you know, ladder. And I felt dead. You know, I felt like I don't understand. You know, some of my audience will have heard me say this story before, but there was this pinnacle moment where I was sitting on a beach in Mexico, and it was a trip that my husband and I had been looking forward to for a very long time, always assuming that like when the next thing happens, we'll be better, you know, we'll feel better, whatever. And I'm sitting on the beach and I have a margarita in hand and it's a stunning view, and there's just no external reason that I should be unhappy, should, you know, air quotes, should be unhappy. And I was so miserable and so empty. And it was just this moment of whatever I've been doing isn't working. Whatever external thing that I've been, ladder I've been climbing, like pursuing all of this, these accolades, you know, I graduated top of my class, was always the good student, was always, you know, the impressive employee, whatever, like it just wasn't working for me anymore. And I felt so hollow. And it was that summer in that really deep depression, that really deep down, that I started looking inward for the first time in this way. Like before, it was very, again, pop psychology and mindset and, you know, how to manipulate my thoughts and not a lot to do with like my own kind of deeper voices that I hadn't been listening to. And so in that journey, someone recommended that I dig into the hero's journey because I was in communications and stories was a big part of what I did. So I went into the hero's journey, and it's by a man named Joseph Campbell. He's a historian, mythologist, and read this very profound book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. It's an oldie but goodie, and it's brilliant and beautiful. And he makes a lot of references to Jung, Carl Jung, who is a really the father of modern day psychology. And so I had studied Jung in college, but had kind of forgotten. And then in this journey of reading the hero's myth, I was so turned on. Like I had felt so dead for so long that when I started reading and I was feeling so turned on, I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like I haven't felt this excited or alive in a long time. And a part of that is because the hero's journey is very similar to the heroine's journey. But because the hero and heroine's journey is not an ascent, it's a descent. We don't climb mountains in this journey. We go deep into underworlds. And it made what I had struggled with my whole life, which was depression and darkness and feeling heavy, it made it a tool for rebirth and not something that made me wrong or bad, but just something that was totally unintegrated in myself. And so it was the call to go within, into the dark forest, into the crevices that are scary as fuck, that I felt finally free to investigate those parts of me that I'd always been like dragging behind me, you know, in my life. And so in that journey, it set me off on a really amazing road that eventually led me to the heroine's myth, which is a little different than the hero's. Maureen Murdoch was a Jungian psychologist, and she was also a huge fan of Joseph Campbell's work, but she felt like his work did not reflect a woman's journey. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I can pause there. I know it's always a lot. And we can talk about maybe the stages as well, but I just wanted to invite you into this because I know you had a really similar upbringing.
We have a very similar story, actually. I think this is one reason why we connected. And it's so funny that you, I definitely relate with you with the upbringing. For an example, I was always the person in my family who was labeled as the moody one. I labeled myself as the moody one too, because I just had so much emotion. When everyone else seemed to align with something that they were all happy about, I always felt like I didn't want to do that, or I had, you know, some type of emotional outburst that was not looked on as like a healthy expression of what I was feeling. And so it was very much, again, the more masculine energy of just like contain everything, don't get too emotional, crying means that you're weak, which is very common. And so I grew up kind of feeling like there was something wrong with me, like you mentioned, and it manifested as depression early on, actually. And so because of that, I sought out counselors, coaches very early on. Like as soon as I kind of left home, went to college, I got my own counselors. And a big part of what, and that was pivotal to my journey, but a big part of why I did that was because I was so afraid of messing up my life and messing up the people that I loved, their lives, because I couldn't control my emotions. Mm-hmm. So it was very much like this part of me that I again rejected, this very emotional, honestly, very feminine, like chaotic part that I didn't know what to do with, because I wanted to follow that masculine kind of like my father's path. I always looked up to my father. I still do, but in a different way now. But I always wanted to sort of follow in his footsteps. And I did. So I have a very long history of an academic career. Like I was always pursuing, you know, studying, a big goal. It was very much like the hero's masculine path that I was on. Mm-hmm. And for me, where everything sort of fell apart, which again, I thought of as a bad thing at first, but now we'll talk about this more, but now I see it in a different light. Was this is so funny that your moment was on the beach, because mine was actually two.
Really?
But mine, yeah. So I graduated from a doctorate degree, which I was completely burnt out. And I was so burnt out that I basically realized I could not, and I didn't want to go on the traditional naturopathic route, which is like either a residency or find a job as a primary care doctor in a clinic. I was so burnt out. I literally had the thought in my head, which now after, you know, researching more about burnout, I've found is actually extremely common for people to have this thought. Mm. I literally thought, if I get a residency, I think I will die next year. Like I will be so stressed out, so burnt out that I will develop some type of illness and I will die. That was the thought, you know, irrational, because I was actually in good health, but I had that thought. And I've actually since realized that that's a pretty common thought, to feel like I'm going to die, because in a way you kind of do. That's kind of what burnout psychologically is about. So I decided to take a break. I decided to pursue my passion, which was a lot more about the mind, body, psycho, emotional. So I found the Jungian coaching and all that. But during kind of that time, I got married. We went on a honeymoon. I had so many things going on that year. And my moment was, I was on my honeymoon at a place. It was in Mexico. I had been looking forward to like this resort. I'd never really gone to a resort before. Like I had, you know, drink in my hand and stuff. And I realized, which the honeymoon actually ended up being great, but towards the beginning of the honeymoon, I suddenly was like, I am so disappointed in my life. Everything turned out great, right? I mean, graduating from a doctor's degree is an amazing feat. Like I did it. I married somebody who I totally loved. Like I'm on this honeymoon, you know, we're able to afford this honeymoon. And the feeling I had was that I'm just so disappointed. Like, I'm so disappointed because I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. And I remember my counselor telling me at that time, she's like, you know, Katarina, that sounds like the dark night of the soul. So I started, which is another, well, it's not purely Jungian concept, but Carl Jung talked about it. And it connects with the heroine's journey, because it's a, like Bella was saying, it's a descent. So going down into that underworld is like the dark night of the soul. And it's basically that time where a lot of us have achieved what we think will make us happy, and we realize it doesn't. And so then you are faced with this crushing reality that the external does not validate you. It just doesn't. So then what are you left with? What you're left with is going inward. Which is what we're going to talk about. So I actually, you kind of already answered this, but I resonated with the hero's journey early on. And again, I've read quite a bit about that too. And I love it. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I think I resonated with it so much early on because it was more of a masculine point of view of
entirely.
Of a call to adventure, which really excited me. Fighting dragons, proving yourself, your worth, and all of that. And I think it has a place, but for the heroine's journey is different. And so I would love if you went through the heroine's journey briefly and kind of talked about how for us there there is a pretty pivotal difference with the heroine's journey descending and the hero's journey sort of like having, there's like some descent sometimes in some fairy tales, well, but it's a bit different.
Yeah. The hero's journey by Joseph Campbell's standards is a descent. Like it is a death and rebirth. It's a cyclical experience of self. So I would say that they're similar in that way. They kind of start in a slightly different place. So I don't want to go into too much detail about the hero's journey. If you're interested, obviously, please go look it up. It's brilliant. If you want to read that book, Hero with a Thousand Faces, I totally recommend it. But the heroine's journey starts from a different place. So the ordinary world is basically where they both start, which is up until kind of our mid early adulthood, maybe 30s. It doesn't matter the age, but you're in agreement with the cultural norms. You're basically in a lot of conditioning that you learn what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. Who do I need to be in order to be loved and seen and appreciated? And everything else I'm going to push aside. And so you're really in this state of response to the outside world as defining who you are. And for women in this day and age, that's very much attached to them hiding or banishing their femininity. And when I say the word femininity, I'm talking about it in the richest, most holistic version of femininity, which we can obviously go into exactly what that means. Mm-hmm. But the patriarchal culture that we live in has a very narrow definition of femininity. It has a lot of connotations around servitude, around weakness, around, you know, one of version of femininity, like motherhood or maidenhood, but not really the full depth and breadth of femininity. And so because we grow up with oftentimes mothers who we do not want to emulate their lives, they're either repressed by our fathers and by the culture, they're sad, they're depressed, they're just outside of their power, sometimes dismissed in small ways, disrespected by the father, or the mother herself could be a huge in her masculine energy. So whatever it is, there's a cultural rejection of what we term to be the weak feminine. And so what we learn as young girls is to really like emulate the masculine in order to have power, in order to be accepted in the world. So the first step of the heroine's journey is divorcing herself from her true nature or her deepest nature in the feminine. And then after that, you kind of have this road of trials is one of the ways she terms it, where you're kind of fighting for your place for success in the masculine world. And eventually you kind of get there. Like we both experienced, there's some element of arrival where you've been the good girl. You've done what they asked. You've done what they told you you should do to be happy, to be respected, to be loved. Somehow you followed their rule book. And at the end of that, you feel so dead. So that next step, really the phase is the spiritual aridity is what she terms it, which is feeling of death, feeling of emptiness, which is we both described kind of like on a beach for like the external is so beautiful. And somehow internally we're so dead. And it's because we follow these rules of the masculine world and really forgotten this other part of us. So that's really the edge where women start to feel the call to our own adventure, which is to dip down into the lower half of this cycle, into the underworld, and go retrieve what we've lost, which is like the dark feminine, the great mother, this other aspect of full dimensionality of the feminine. And in that journey, it is a heroine's journey. There are monsters, there are mentors, there are so many things that you have to overcome, which is a big reason why I teach a method that's really rooted in desire and pleasure. So I think you have to have a vision for why you're doing that journey in order to fuel it. So if you're going on these journeys and you don't know your why, it's easy to turn back. And then it's almost worse if you turn back than if you never started at all. Actually, Rob, our teacher, would say that. So at that place where you go through these huge trials and tribulations, you're learning a ton. You're basically unmasking yourself. All of these personas and ways that you've self-identified start to shed like skin until you're kind of naked at the bottom of self. So this is what I call the reverse apex. So you're at the bottom, you're in the underworld. And in that place of nakedness, you're able to re-merge with your true power, your true form. So these gifts, these your vitality, your desire, your magic is all resting in this dark place, which is why Joseph Campbell is most famously quoted to say, the cave you dare enter holds the treasure that you seek. And that's really the treasure that you're kind of after. And so in
like your true finally, self, that spark.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Is there, and it's in the cave. It's not at the top of the mountain. It's in the bottom of the cave. And so I loved that. And so you really re-merge with the mother. You're fully integrated with your feminine. You meet the goddess is like kind of what she says, and reconcile with her. After that comes the reincorporation of a healthy masculine. So I know there's a lot of polarity conversations in the personal development world. And I want to speak to that because I believe that there's, I think you would agree that there's feminine and masculine within us all, that we all have these pieces of us. The problem is that when we reject one and live from another, we almost pollute the essence and it becomes toxic. So when we just live from the masculine and the shadow masculine, like it gets really toxic. It doesn't make the masculine bad. We desperately need what the inner masculine helps us do, which is provide us structure and really the container for our creativity to be its most thriving, healthy. Mm-hmm. So, but really you have to put that aside for the first kind of big part of this journey and really focus on your feminine and reincorporating that so that you can approach the masculine from a much more integrated and healthy place. And in so doing, you actually find the birthplace of union, the birthplace, like the sexual energy of creation. When you have both healthy masculine and feminine within you, you become the creatrix, you become the magician, the manifester, the ones that can produce
what you
something
want.
From nothing, exactly, the liquid gold. And I think that's one of those things that also in this work, we hear a lot about manifestation and mindset. And I love those pieces are beautiful. But until you have a united will, until your shadow and your conscious mind, your subconscious mind are integrated, you can't actually manifest really. And so what I think is that this journey is the precursor for any manifestation power to be unlocked.
I love that. And I'm very happy that you brought in the information about masculine and feminine energies. And actually there was Maureen Murdoch in this book at one point talks about how she, when she talks about the masculine, she says she's not talking about a gender. She's talking about an archetypal energy. And I think when we're talking about this, that's kind of where we're coming from. The heroine's journey, for how I see it, is that because we have come into this world in this time, in this society, let's say with female genitalia, we are treated differently, right? And so like you were saying that some conditioning is put on us that might be a little different than somebody who came into the world with male genitalia. And so that's why we are talking more about women and all that. But when we're talking about the energies, it's not really like a gender. We're like talking about specific energies within all of us. And that's one reason why a lot of fairy tales actually have that happy ending where the prince and the princess marry. It's not really because I know a lot of people have kind of been up in arms recently because it's such a heterosexual, you know,
old kind
of vision, but it has to do with the duality and the marrying of the opposites within all of us, because like Bella was saying, we can't live the life we want completely separating the masculine or the feminine. Like the whole point of this is being able to have a healthy balance and expressing them in a healthy way. And that's how we're able to be creative, but then also express it in a way that we want in the world with both of those energies.
Yeah.
And what were you going to say?
One thing that I was going to kind of speak to is, like, we're using the word healthy a lot. And I want to use a self-definition for that, because when I say healthy, I usually relate it to being empowered. So, like, I think the healthiest version of feminine and masculine balanced whole self living is one where we are in the united will state. So we have, like, access to our subconscious and our conscious worlds are united. We have this massive awareness, and then we become creator of whatever it is that we want. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to kind of underscore, because the term healthy can sometimes be used even against the dark feminine, for instance, like, oh, it's not a healthy version of femininity, when in fact, mm-hmm. An empowered united will is really what I'm speaking to when I speak of health, which is like our maximal potential as human beings, as creators, is really when we're empowered to such a deep state that we're in vitality, which maybe is a word that I prefer.
I love that distinction. Yes. And I wanted to bring up and see what you had thoughts on this. So in especially this book, The Heroine's Journey, and some of the stories she references, she talks about going into the underworld. But is that the same thing as in some myths and fairy tales where they go into the dark forest, right? Is it just sort of a concept of going into your subconscious and meeting all of your suppressed and repressed parts, which this dark feminine is there basically where we meet it? Is that's kind of the same thing?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Well said. It's really like there's so much metaphor. And something I didn't say at the beginning of in the description of why these are so important frameworks and why I use them as integral to my work is because the subconscious specifically is where all of our conditioning lives, where all of our like wiring is. And our subconscious speaks in metaphor and symbol and story. It's not our most logical brain. It's actually a deeply feminine part of our being is the subconscious. It's the underwater. It's the dark forest. It's like a place in which when we are trying to access, we have to learn to speak its language, which is why, you know, we learned dream interpretation and other such things, and why the myths are so important into helping us understand ourselves is because that's really the language of the subconscious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know right now, so I'm thinking of the fairy tale, the Russian fairy tale, Vasilisa. And she, especially the one, which it has several names, but Vasilisa the Wise or Vasilisa the Fair, where she goes into the forest and she meets Baba Yaga. And this, you brought up a really great point when you were talking about going to the underworld, which is that it's kind of important to have a why, to have kind of a little light in the darkness, so that one, you don't retreat prematurely, but two, it like gets you through. And I think this is such an important part because they talk about the dark night of the soul, which depression is linked to that. Most people who are going through a dark night of the soul or going into the underworld, let's say symbolically, how that shows up often is depression. And that's a touchy subject because depression is a very serious matter, right? And in Maureen Murdoch's book, she talks about how a lot of times it is looked at as there's something wrong with you and we have to get you back to being happy right away. And a lot of times the medical community will look at it as in that way too, where, okay, all we're focused on right now is getting you out of the depression, which can sometimes pull you out prematurely. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that we have to recognize, because in this, talking about the heroine's journey, this is actually an important part, is kind of being able to go through the depression, not try to get back out to the light right away. But that being said, it's dangerous, right? Like going into the depths. Carl Jung talked about how going into the subconscious, he had a dream where he was in the dark and he had a lantern, and he knew that this was the little light of his consciousness. And if that light went out, he was in serious trouble. And so he interpreted that as we have to be careful when we're going through it. And sometimes, like you were saying, having a guide, a coach, counselor, people that like making sure you're talking to people that you love and that trust, that you trust and that trust you, that you can actually have conversations like this with. It's so important. Be connected, being connected with your vision, because going into this underworld is not an easy feat. And it can bring you to parts of yourself that are very hard to handle, that you might need help with. And knowing like when to implement certain things at certain times to get yourself through it, that's what's important, instead of like blindly kind of jumping into the depths or just jumping into the forest, right?
Yeah, no, I love what you're saying, because there's a theme in all myths that once you have to be the one to step over the threshold, but there always is like signs, symbols, mythical creatures and spirits that both present the call to you, that you, then you have to take action. You have to be the one to jump, to cross. And then on that journey, where when sometimes when you feel the most afraid and the most lost, in those myths, there's always a guide or a mentor that comes in and imparts or channels some kind of spiritual wisdom to aid you. So in myths, typically it's like the giving of a magic element. So either that is like a special sword or a potion or something that allows them to move through. I'm thinking right now, actually, if anyone's a Lord of the Rings fan, is when
I am
the dark feminine, actually one of the symbols of the dark feminine, and that is Galadriel. She's an elven queen that gives Frodo the light of Arendil, which is like, it in dark places, this will be your guide. And so this is part of like these imparts of tools that allow you to traverse this seemingly impossible task. And so I think you and I, doing the work that we do, have both found it pretty impossible to do alone.
Yeah.
And that by doing it together, seeing our journeys in other people's reflected in other people's experiences, such a comforting reflection, and having a guide who's done it before you. Obviously you have to be the one to do it, and having a guide with you to provide you that structure and encouragement and all of that stuff is so, so vital. Because another element of our culture right now is hyper individualism. We've become like capitalist commodities, where like the best capital, you know, like the best parts of a capitalist system is if we're all individuals, all consumers, all buyers, that we don't function as a collective anymore. And so in that culture that we're in, it feels almost odd sometimes for people to reach out and ask for help, which I think we've also seen a huge advent, and I'm sure you can speak to this more, of, you know, the use of prescription medications and the make wrong. It's a phrase a teacher of mine loves to use, the make wrong of self. So like anything that I'm going through, I shouldn't be going through this. I should be happy. I should feel better. And you don't see the medicine or what's trying to get your attention. So like depression, for instance, is a symptom of a long ignored voice in you. And it's finally like, listen, you're not listening to me. I'm going to take you down, and we're going to stay down until we have a conversation. And most people just feel like they're fucked. And it's like, actually, there's something inside of you that is so desperate for you to hear what it has to say. And that there's such medicine in that. And we don't have to think of it as, you know, you failing as a human because you're depressed or you're anxious, which I think is how I felt, at least.
100% I felt that way too. And I mean, that was like, I sought out counselors, coaches, because I was like, there's something wrong with me. And if I don't fix this, then no one's going to want to be with me. I'm going to destroy my life. I mean, it was like, I need to get to the place where I can always be happy. And I grew up with messages that way as well, which was like, always put on a brave face, always smile, you know, which again, like when we have these messages, there are some truths to this. I'm not saying that that was all bad. Like, you know, there is some type of strength there is to being able to, like, you know, go to work and all that. We're not saying that's bad, but in the process of me trying to be that way, I was completely rejecting what was actually trying to come alive in me, basically, until I couldn't really ignore it anymore. And you're very right. It's so interesting. That was one reason why I kind of pivoted after graduation and decided that I wanted to focus more on the mind, body, counseling, coaching part of my profession, basically, and like stick with that. Because what I saw was that I love naturopathic medicine. I love alternative medicine. Like I always go to naturopaths. Like I will always, you know, root for that. But it is kind of steeped in that idea that if you are having symptoms, if you're having depression, like there's just an imbalance probably in the body, or let's find the root cause so that we can fix it, which again, very necessary sometimes. But I noticed that on some level, a lot of times after I started learning a lot about Carl Jung and after I started doing my own work, I realized that sometimes that prolongs your separation from maybe what you really need to meet, which like in this case could be that suppressed feminine.
Is a great it's a great dovetail into this next kind of part of our conversation, which is really the dark feminine. Like what the fuck is that? How do we integrate with her? What is, you know, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what it is too.
Yes. And this is a perfect, I'm going to say this real quick, because I love that you brought up the Lord of the Rings. You know, so I'm a huge fan. I read the books 2 times, love the movies. Oh my gosh. I just think that they're all amazing, but this is hilarious. Galadriel in the movie, especially, she kind of freaked me out. Like
really?
Like I was scared of her, especially like where that time in the movie where they are kind of have that creepy where she's like being faced with the temptation of taking the ring. And then she's like, oh, I passed the test. And she has kind of like has a deeper voice. And she just like really freaked me out. And this makes a lot of sense because she does represent more the dark feminine. These are that side of the feminine that we have cast into the shadow. And often what happens is we're afraid. If we see that outside projected onto something, either we're going to say, oh, there's something wrong with that, so I'm going to leave, or we're literally afraid of it. So, there are 3 feminine archetypes, right, Bella? And I would love for you to kind of tell us about that and to go into that.
Yes. So the dark feminine is that it's all of the banished parts of Earth, the feminine energy that represents the most wild, the most raw, the most mysterious, the most ferocious, and the most powerful aspects of femininity. And to be honest, it's like you said, terrifying for people to confront that. And so because you're unable to control, then it becomes impossible to really allow her out of the shadows. And so the 3 main archetypes that I've kind of delineated into the dark feminine are the sorceress, the seductress, and the destroyer. And I like using kind of stories to tell what each one kind of aspects of the feminine nature that is suppressed. So the first one is the sorceress. And she is like Baba Yaga. So if you're familiar with Baba Yaga, that's a good example for her. But I really like to use the one of Ursula, which is nice because it's a recent, the movie has just recently come out too.
Yeah.
So Ursula is an interesting symbolic character because she is literally in the story cast out of the conscious, the light world, the mer world. And she has an unbelievable power. And when the maiden archetype, when Ariel comes to Ursula and wants to be with her, you know, love on land, she wants to trade this aspect of herself in order to go be honestly rescued by the masculine. The sorceress in Ursula she's a tough teacher. She's kind of like a Saturn energy. And she lets Ariel know what the cost is, the cost of this thing that you want and your naivety of trading this huge aspect of yourself and your family and all of this for this projection of fantasy and this perfect world. You're so naive. You don't understand. Like you're in the maiden phase. And so she tells her that it will cost her her voice. for her to do that. And I feel like there's so much symbolism in that, in understanding how the sorceress is not only like this seat of all chemical power, like she is the one that can produce gold from nothing, from straw. She can create literally whatever she wants. And she's so powerful that we fear her. But she also is like, she's a no bullshit queen unto herself style of femininity. And so that one's one of my favorite ones. There's plenty of more versions of her that we could talk about, but I'll leave it there so we can go on to the next two. The next one is the seductress or the siren. And she is really the rejected parts of female sexuality in our culture today. So like, you know, women are very much, we're considered sex symbols. We have a lot of pushback against the ways that our bodies and sexuality have been valued, but they've also mostly been controlled and mostly commodified. And they're not in, for most women, a lived, deep-seated experience of their power. It's more like power over. Men have power over with sexuality, or women can kind of use it in their own ways for power, but it's not a for pleasure itself. For my own radical self love and knowledge, do I be in my seductress? And so one of the ones that I like to use for that one is like the classical story of the siren in the Odyssey, if anyone is familiar with that story, is these mermaids who are these kind of they're mythical creatures. They're kind of like goddesses and mermaids in this epic, but they lure sailors to the rocks and sink ships and cause men to descend into the depths, into the water. So what speaks to me in metaphor in that story is really that when we follow our desires, we really have to go through almost this death into the underworld in order to really uncover our true pleasure, our true turn on, our true power in this liberated sexuality way. Because right now, like, I coach women all over who we all share this experience of our sexuality feeling so distant from us, yeah. Our sex feeling really a lot of like performative style of sexual experiences where we really have been educated by porn, a lot of shame, a lot of disconnection from our own body, our own anatomy, what gives us pleasure, and really having this, you know, seeking approval, seeking the power from men, almost like we go to men and seek to take back something with our sexuality as a tool, versus the sexuality within women literally is the source of all creative, mystical, life-giving magic, really. And so I think that, you know, kind of the suppressed feminine has been in largely a way that's disconnected ourselves from our sexuality and our pleasure and is really steeped in shame. So the siren really represents this part of ourselves that, if awakened, again, we can live this turned on life, and it's magical. And it's also terrifying for our culture at large.
Yes.
Yes. And we could
have there's a lot there
on each one of these archetypes. And the next one is the destroyer, which this has a very, I don't know if anyone's familiar with like Hindu mythology, but like Kali kind of energy. It's the phoenix. It's the fire that burns and destroys in order to birth new life. So it's this destruction that the feminine knows is the beginning of the next cycle. And so much of our culture, again, is you know, up only, growth only. And we've often really lost contact with what is necessary for real growth is compost, is decay, is like ashes, is the forest burning. Like, we can't keep this high summertime, you know, ecstasy all the time without giving back to the cycle of life, which is that things have to die.
Yeah.
And so we have this restriction and we hold on to things much longer than they serve us. And the dark feminine really wants to help us allow those snake shedding pieces of us to really give into death and allow it to be a transformer. There's so many mythological destroyers, like I mentioned, Kali being one of them. But my favorite story is Jean Grey, which if anyone knows the X-Men series, I know we're so millennials right now. I'm just like, we're exposing our millennial nature with these movies. They're so good. But so in the story of Jean Grey, she is the most powerful X-Men kind of on Earth. And the symbolic masculine in the movie, Xavier, who's like the patriarch, knows this and deems her too powerful. And so he creates a mental chasm between her more dark power and between her more palatable self. And so she actually is really unaware of how powerful she truly is. And so what we learn of her in the movie is just this like very demure, very like sweet, kind of soft spoken. She's powerful enough that doesn't make you uncomfortable. You know, she's the sexual interest of both, you know, of men in this movie, but she's not like overly sexual. She's very, you know, sideline flirtatious, like nothing too confronting. And that's really, really good example of what the masculine kind of in our day and age has wanted the feminine to be, you know, like in this controlled state. And because there's this schism between her persona, essentially her mask self of this pleasant good girl, and her darker power, the division between them grows so strong that when she goes through a death cycle in the movie, she sacrifices herself and dies. She's reborn the phoenix, and she's assimilated with her dark power, which is the most powerful in this comic universe, is the phoenix force. But because she's been divided from it for so long, and she's no longer, it's not an integrated version of the feminine, it's a blast out. So now this version of her becomes highly, highly destructive, but in a less conscious way. And so she destroys everything, not just, you know, the things that she would like to point her energy to. It becomes friends, lovers, you know, people that she wouldn't necessarily want to destroy in the movie. She ends up destroying because she has no discernment with her destruction. And so that's really a beautiful example of the power of when we're split from that parts of ourselves. They come out sideways, they come out in toxic ways where we're not really in collaboration with them. And that is what happens with her. Whereas in, you know, in later versions of the comics, like there's the integrated Phoenix Force is again, the most powerful, and it balances both kind of the light and the darkness. And it becomes this force of necessary death and life, or death and rebirth cycles in the universe. That's kind of the Phoenix Force is in charge of making sure that things die so that things can be born. Mm-hmm. And so we've really pushed those parts of ourselves away. And so I think dividing them into those three categories really helps us understand in these different flavors where the dark feminine can show up and kind of how to engage her.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And that story of Jean Grey really is, I watched the movie such a long time ago, so I didn't even really remember what actually happened, but it, now that you're explaining it, it literally describes what happens, just like the natural course when we suppress, separate ourselves. And this is also a good point because so Carl Jung talked about how we're always throughout our life, we're given opportunities to like descend into the underworld multiple times, not just like one time. And we can make that conscious decision if we're going to fall through or if we're going to come back out. And a lot of times, most of us probably do like back out a bit, everyone, you know, and then we're giving another opportunity. And then maybe we back out of that. We're given another opportunity. Maybe we go through that one, but he also talks about how the repercussions of not answering the call, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's this, which is that just because we've suppressed something does not render it harmless. That's what I always say. It's beautiful. Like putting things into the shadow. Those parts of ourselves are not rendered harmless. They're not sitting on the shelf, just like gathering dust, mm-hmm. waiting for us. That's not really how it works. Like they become their own sources of energy, basically. And because we are not just conscious beings, that is literally a part of us. So we cannot really go through our lives only acting out of the conscious. That doesn't happen. We want early on, like that's what we want. We want to be in complete control. That's what the ego wants, of how we act, what we think, what we put out into the world. And the reality is like, well, this is what Bella and I work with. This is what our training is all about, is that the reality is that we are influenced by the subconscious a lot more than we think. And so that's why this process can be so rewarding for us, because we do have free will not to engage it, but to engage it means that we're actually working with these parts of ourselves. And it's so rewarding.
Yeah. It's
so rewarding. And, I don't have the exact quote, but I just read today in this heroine's journey, how she talks about how the feminine only becomes dangerous when it is cast aside and like suppressed in this way. That's when it does become, like we saw in this story, emulated Jean Grey, where it can become dangerous. There is a huge part of the feminine that is a destroyer. Yeah. And, but we have to realize that that's a part of us. That's an energy that serves us, except for when we push it aside and when we bury it so much, then it really does become, it has a dangerous element to it.
Yeah. It's so funny you brought up the term or the concept free will, because it's actually, I believe it was Jung who talked about how he didn't believe that we had free will until we did shadow work or went on the hero's journey. And so I love that as a concept, because
interesting.
Because, you know, I was a philosophy student and we would talk about like, does free will exist or does it not? And for him, it's a straddled perspective. He's like, until you go on the hero or heroine's journey and you go into your shadow and you recover the parts of yourselves that you've separated from, you're not free will, because your subconscious is the one that's pulling the strings, but you think that it's your conscious mind. So you're really having this operator that's kind of autonomic, that's pointing that's controlling your life. And there's that quote I think he has as well, is like, that the subconscious will basically direct your life, but you'll call it fate.
Yes.
And will be controlled and will be following, because it's just our conditioning. It's like all of the beliefs and all of our conditioning and our wiring that's caught up in the subconscious is what is directing our life. So if we don't look at it, we're not free.
Yeah.
Which is why I always say the liberating art of shadow work, because without it, we are not free. Mm-hmm. And we have to integrate with these things if we desire freedom. And that's why I don't think everybody, you know, either consciously chooses that. Like everyone doesn't desire the freedom to the degree of what the cost is, the price is of going on and really reclaiming your freedom, is you have to go into the dark places that you've been avoiding. You have to feel the feelings that you thought would kill you. And that is what unlocks a power. It's an initiation. And that's kind of my last point around this, is that we live in an initiation-free culture where, like, again, we just kind of stumble into our lives following other people's footsteps and trying to, you know, do what we're supposed to do and being a good girl. And we lack the initiation into our full power. And so you see generations of people and women in particular really in this petrified maiden state, where we're constantly feeling like we're the victim to our circumstances and not the creator of them. And so that's really what I think is so transformative about this work, and why it transformed my life, why I think it transformed yours is because you're finally in the driver's seat, not by sheer will, but by willingness to go and be in the places that we once fear.
Yeah. And that actually makes a lot of sense. I think that like in the moment, it's not like we're being blindly forced into something, like let's say the underworld. Like technically we have a choice to just to like, let's say that it is depression or something. Like we kind of have a choice whether to go this way or that way. But I love that you brought this up, because if we are making the choice based off of a subconscious conditioning, let's say that, for example, in my example would be that a lot of the choices I made pursuing certain things in school was because I had this subconscious conditioned fear that if I didn't, then I would be a complete failure. Now that was subconscious. So that wasn't really free will. I felt it's like it, in a weird way. I mean, I technically had a choice to continue school or to not, but my choice was driven by this unconscious conditioned fear that I would not be able to live with myself if I didn't, because everyone would be disappointed in me, because I would be a nobody, you know, all of da, 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 which in the end, when you look at it as a full picture, like you were saying, that's not really free will there, even though I thought it was. So I love that you brought that point into the conversation, because I think that's also something that I love this work, because it's so, it's about experiencing this. It's not about rationally like, well, you know, the philosophy is this, this, and this. I mean, we love talking about the philosophy because we're interested in it. But when you experience it, that's really the magic of it.
Yeah.
Whereas like there are so many instances in the past where in retrospect, I realized, oh my gosh, I really was forcing myself to do this, this, and this because of some unconscious belief. And now I don't have those restraints anymore in that aspect of my life. And that's what keeps me going in this.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to say about this too, because I'm hearing underneath what you're saying, is really it's choosing to live from desire versus obligation. And that is a feminine fucking path.
Yes.
Like to live from obligation is much more aligned with the masculine. Like one of my teachers would call that masculine integrity, like following through with what you said you were going to do, what you should do. And it can get kind of shadowy as well on that side, but obligation is really what drives our lives. And then this shift and what you were talking about, like with choosing your route, choosing my route, like I was also on the doctor road for many, many years before this hit me like a train. But to shift to a feminine path is really the desire led. Like we have to first go in and reconcile the parts of us that are malnourished and realize that we have a unique spark within us that has unique desires that we don't choose. They choose us, you know, like the desires that you have are in harmony. The deepest ones are the ones that are in harmony with what will enliven and awaken your soul, which I think is what your highest calling is, is the thing that wakes you the fuck up. I don't think it's, you know, that there's some category of being that's better than other people. I think that if you are fully alive, it's following that breadcrumb trail of desire, or as another analogy that I love to use is the white rabbit. Like following your desires is following it into a magical underworld where you get to experience yourself as the most enlivened, awakened person you can be. And that's terrifying. And it's often, if I'm honest on the desire path, it's humiliating to be really in touch with what it is that you want and not have the rational mind come in and tell you, you're not allowed to have it. Yeah. It's not practical. It's totally an unreasonable thing. These are all the reason, you know, meaning around people who want that kind of stuff. That's why, again, the dark feminine in the seductress or the siren, she's really the one that will call you back home to your desire. When you start feeling that deadened version of you, you're living from obligation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a good litmus test.
Yes. And this is such, I really wanted to talk about this. Such a good segue into, I have a couple quotes that I wanted to read from her book too, because they just jumped out on the page at me. But in this, in Maureen Murdoch talks about how there's an important part with this transition of recognizing, letting go of living from that obligation and all these persona boxes that I've checked and all that, and making this transition to actually just being in your own vitality. And that sounds like we're talking about it and we're excited about it. And that sounds like such an amazing thing, but in reality, there is a lot of grief that goes into that, that grief of letting go of the rat race, letting, like, suddenly you feel like you don't really fit anymore, because still our society and probably a lot of your friends and your work and all this stuff fit into that world. People understood you when you talked about how exhausted you were and how much you worked and how, you know, yada, 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 how much you hate this, but you have to do it because you, I'm thinking of even student life. I can relate to that because I was like, how much was complaining, and we bonded over that as students.
Commiserating. And it's the best.
And so suddenly when you're transitioning into you know what, I just kind of spent the day like hanging out with myself and like, I didn't really do much today. And I allowed myself to do that. People don't either. One, there's shame there because you feel like that's not useful. And for me personally, like, I was afraid that people would judge me, but also that I wouldn't be able to relate with some of my friends who were more of still kind of in like a hustle culture. And suddenly I was starting to see how I could get out of it. And that was actually one of the hardest parts for me. There was a lot of grief there. And there's also, okay, I'm going to find some of these quotes because I connected so much with them. And I feel like a lot of people would as well. Okay, here we go. So she's talking about this part where, okay, so here's the quote. When a woman stops doing, she must learn how to simply be. Being is not a luxury. It is a discipline. The heroine must listen carefully to her true inner voice. That means silencing the other voices anxious to tell her what to do. She must be willing to hold the tension until the new form emerges. Anything less than that aborts growth, denies change, and reverses transformation. Being takes courage and demands sacrifice. So for the sacrifice to be complete, old ways have to be excised. And then she goes on to say kind of that there is a grief there for us, which is very real. And also because we are stepping into unknown territory, because we haven't embodied this part of being, and we don't really know how to live in the world in that way yet.
Yeah. Oh, I'm like getting misty, like hearing you say that and reading that quote back. It's so beautiful, because, and the point that you're making around the grief is so important for people and listeners to like really be with, because it sounds like we're saying like, you know, just be yourself and you'll be happy. And it's like, actually it's a terrifying process that is ultimately like, again, the boon, the beauty of the reward of doing that is like the most alive, incredible you have ever felt. The most clear, the most turned on, the most energized you've ever felt. But in that process of learning to let go of what other people want from you is really difficult. Like when you stop being a people pleaser, people are not pleased. And there's a lot of pushback that you get from all of a sudden stepping more fully into what's true for you. You have to stop acting and living from a place of what's true for everybody else and reflecting that, which was very good girl, very comforting. You're a very nice person to be around when you're like, yeah, this personality that you're looking at, I shaped it just for you. Like, do you like this part? Do you like that part? Like, we're not able to really hold ourselves steady regardless of other people's reactions to us, and remember that like we're true to the values that we want to hold, and that's a choice, and we're not doing it out of out of reaction or resentment or rejection of other people, but we're doing it out of the truth of ourselves. And I just feel like sometimes in my story, times where being more fully myself meant losing people, like, or losing, fear of losing them, or feeling like, oh, this shape that I've been morphing myself into for decades no longer fits in this life that I made. So I have to go make a new life. And that's like a tall order. So that's why, again, we've talked about this, but yeah, like having people around you and other women specifically, I think, on these journeys, like why I run that group, The Coven, and it really is more than just a group to me. Like it really represents the meaning behind pulling women together and having us remember how to be in witness of each other's journeys without saving one another, and also being in a state of like honor and inspiration for this commitment that we all share to like really act and from a place of liberation. So anyway, so beautifully yes. said. And
I love that.
Grief is real.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the witnessing is huge. Being witnessed by people who can understand and have empathy for and compassion for the process, not people who like that, I think is so important. And actually, and Brené Brown even talks about that. Like, like it's not just any witness. It's not just going out and kind of, you know, sharing your story with anybody. Like there is this sacredness to the journey, and finding groups, coaches, counselors, you know, friends and stuff during this time that can witness it from, they can at least understand parts of it. They can be open to not just not giving advice, but really just being there with you, compassion, empathy, all that is so important. And I have to say this other quote too, because it was so good, but
it jumped off of what
you said. It reminded me of it. So I just found it. Another quote from this book is, if we just keep living out a role that we know well, the cost of that is to become increasingly cut off from that which is in the collective unconscious, that which not only nourishes us, but also provides the raw material that allows us to mess up. Very often in transition periods, that's exactly what is called for, a change by going through chaos of losing the way, of being lost in the forest for some time before we get through and find our paths again. The messiness, that's the other thing, like how we don't really know how to navigate this new way of being because we haven't gone there yet as an individual, but a lot of times as a collective community as well. And so being messy and losing the way, finding the way, losing the way again, our ego doesn't like that. And our conditioned past self it doesn't fit in that. Most of us are brought up where if we go through chaos, if we are messy, that's a bad sign. And we need to have control and figure out how to put in routine habits. You know, there's a reason why those are so popular in our culture now. That's what the role that we were, most of us, if not like everyone, was playing. And so this new way of being, which really is, for lack of a better word, messy, can be really scary. And it's going to bring up shame. It's going to bring up guilt. It's going to bring up all of these things that will be so amazing for us to work through, but it can be really difficult.
Yeah. I love what you're saying about that. One of my agreements to the containers that I run is the messier you are, the better you're doing.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, you were in that.
I know. I love that. I thought of you when I read this quote because of that. Cause I'm like, that was all about this.
Because we also have this like need to, in the perfectionism, to be like the perfect XYZ, you know, that role we're playing. And we want to only share our high, you know, points. It's the culture of social media is just to be like, you know, are you jealous of my life? You know, buy my product. Like it's just like this weird relationship with a totally untrue nature of the messiness and the ups and downs of our lives. And that the down has this gift and the messiness has this gift. And like the feminine is fucking messy. It's raw and it's wild. And it's like, we have to be willing to give up the good girl and to give up the perfectionism, because the perfectionism to me is best described by a woman who I love, Kasia Urbaniak. She's a prolific writer around this topic. She calls it the good girl smush, where we're always trying to either not be too much or not enough. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're in this middle of too much, not enough, too much, not enough. And we're walking this impossible tightrope of perfectionism, when in fact, we're just lukewarm. We've lost all of our potency, all of our power, because we're trying so hard to squeeze ourselves into these narrow definitions of self. And so what really is that first step is like being fucking messy and acknowledging that you don't know everything, that you're continually on the, in a curiosity of self. Like one thing that is I'm getting right now while we're talking about this is often what happens when people start on this journey of redefining, you know, and getting really in the spiritual or the personal development work, that becomes their new ego identity. Yes. So like, rather than being in true transformation, yeah, which is a very humbling journey, it becomes their new persona. And that's what I think, you know, the term spiritual bypassing most aptly describes, because we now, because of all of the certainty of the masculine paradigm of the world we've grown up in, it's like science. This is what is, this is what is not. This is material. This is the law. This is like, there's this, even in religion, it's this desperation that we want for certainty and for control. And the heroine's journey and the dark feminine ask you to give up both.
Yeah.
And it is so terrifying. And oftentimes people feel called to the journey, and then they hear, you know, certain teachers or certain whatever espousing things that they could get in line with, but then they take that identity and it becomes their new certainty. I know for a fact that we, you know, came from star seeds, or I don't know, like there's just like so much constriction that can happen when we're replacing old beliefs with new beliefs, and we become like attached to them.
Yeah.
And I think what's this beautiful, again, invitation of the feminine, of the dark feminine, is to be continually in the process of death and rebirth, to be continually looking at yourself and your life as the mirror to your deeper unconscious. Like if something's going on in my life, in this person, in whatever, and I'm reacting to it, what is that saying about what's going on in me? Like really coming back to that sense of inquiry, really coming back to like kneeling at the altar of the unknown. Really. Yeah. I think that that's like feminine based mysticism is the great mystery. You don't get to know.
Yeah.
You don't get to know. You get to like really lean into practices that align with you and your symbolism and your meaning and like all the different tools that you can find on the spiritual journey, but we don't get suctioned to the tools and then identified with them. Like I see this all the time with divination tools, because I love tarot cards. I love the symbolism of tarot and all these different types of tools. But sometimes we get so identified with the tool that we're still projecting our power external to what these people say, what those healers say, what the definite truth is. And we don't do the deep labor of going in and being responsible. Like in the hero's journey or the heroine's journey, all roads lead home. And it's like that is really understanding our own inner voice, our own inner divinity, and stop projecting it out into the world, which again, I think is so common on the process of awakening, and probably a necessary step. Like this is completely free of judgment of that step.
I constantly catch myself. So it's like 100%.
I have had the biggest ego in the world when it came to like a new thing, a new framework I found. I'm like, all those other people, idiots. And I'm like, oh, and so now really the shadow work is like the foundation to our self-inquiry. And because of shadow work, every time I have a judgment and I have a make wrong, I make someone wrong, I make myself wrong, I'm like, that's a cue, like an initial cue. And it goes across all spectrums. Like the minute I make something wrong, the minute I lose like the wisdom that is there and what's being reflected back at me, and my reactivity is really spicy. Like I know to go in now, whereas before I didn't know that as a cue. I just was in my self-righteousness, and that really kept me in bondage to my own bullshit.
I think you said that so beautiful. And I think it's a great way to wrap it up. And really quickly, I love that you're talking about the way that we can use our judgments too, because I think that sometimes we do get caught up in this, oh, I'm judging them. Okay. I just have to stop. Mm. And this is really what we've learned through shadow work, but those are places that you can investigate more and figure out where you are really attached to some conditioning. Mm-hmm. I recently had an example of this where I suddenly realized I was like judging these types of people so hard. And I was like, and my first reaction was guilt and shame. That was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I'm like this coach and I've like spent so many years dedicated to Jungian psychology stuff. And like, suddenly I find myself in this position where I just cannot help it. I'm like, and I went, I used some of the tools that we use and I went into it and I came up with a very raw and sensitive personal truth, a wound basically that was, I felt like I had been doing so much work and I still didn't have this yada yada that I so craved completely unconscious to me. I would have never. And then I was able to work with something, right? Mm-hmm. Versus just like trying to force myself not to judge them. This is where I love the heroine's journey and shadow work and this type of coaching, because we don't use techniques to just divert our attention. We actually look towards it, whatever is causing us pain and what we want to work on. Yeah. And then we figure out what we can work with. That's the whole work. And I love it so much because a lot of times when we divert our attention, it'll come up in other ways.
Agreed. The approval, that one piece too, of like, we don't even look, like you're saying, not with judgment at our own judgment. We look at it with approval. Like that's been the biggest, that's a huge unlock too. It's like, can I be so loving of myself that even when I am a fucking bitch, I love her too, but she's not in my driver's seat anymore. Like she doesn't drive
my
bus.
And she's not my whole identity. Yeah.
And she's not my whole identity. Like she's a protective part of me that I can hear in the back of my brain and be like, oh, sassy, what's your issue? And I can have a more engaged conversation with these parts of myself and not identify with them, but also have so much space, so much internal space for both my like deeply wise queen self and my like petty fit throwing teenager. And like, those are parts that are going to come with me no matter what. And I am allowed to have these myriads of different self, but ultimately the way that I turn towards them with love, curiosity, with approval will allow me to maintain more seated authority in my inner system. Versus like what you're saying, if I don't look at it or I look at it with judgment, it just creates more density in that space. It doesn't allow it to move. You don't even get its underlying intention. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're familiar with parts work, obviously, Dr. Schwartz talks about how no bad parts, like no part of you has an ill intention at its core. It all has positive, they all have positive intentions for you. Mm-hmm. And so learning to negotiate space with these different needs that can be conflicting, like that's another whole other podcast that we could talk about, conflicting desires. Like when you live a desire like that, you often don't have a singular desire. You have multiple that are longing and deep, and sometimes they hold totally different poles. And so we have to be in so much rich negotiation, or like that quote said, in the tension of what is and what is not yet. And like the in-between, the bardo of that is really where we strengthen our ability to feel. Cause that journey, the heroine's journey, is a high sensation experience.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're getting better at doing.
Yes. Love it. Okay. Well, Bella, this has been absolutely awesome. And I think we need to talk about more, because there's already a lot of things.
More topics.
I know. There are so many other things we have talked about before and that we sort of touched on today, but we weren't really able to go in deep. So I would love to have more conversations, and I think other people would too. So before
comment in the chat, so I'll have later, but you comment in the chat if you guys want a weekly corner with Dr. Kat, and we'll have a week, not weekly, sorry. Oh my God, that'd be a lot. Monthly.
I would love that.
Monthly quarter with Dr. Kat.
Yes, I would absolutely love that. And yeah, so that also brings us to, so for my listeners on the podcast, Bella, I'm going to link all of your information below, but tell us like the best way to reach you, get involved in your work and all that.
Thank you for that invitation. Yeah, so the best place to reach me is Instagram or Facebook. I have a handle called Heroines Portal. So actually you can find that through all of my channels. So at Heroines Portal on Instagram, it's heroinesportal.com is my website. You can go there and I actually offer free discovery calls if we want to see if you are more interested in this work, you have any questions about it. And then the last one is really my heart, which is this community that I started called The Coven. And that's on Facebook. It's Shadow Work or Shadow Alchemy for Awakening Women. And we're really building something special, I think, to have women come together who are hungry for their wholeness. And that's really kind of the place that it's free and it has weekly trainings and conversations. And it's really a place of sacred sisterhood and support. So would love to have people there. And then to stay tuned, I do run a program called The Heroine's Journey, where we take an epic trip on The Heroine's Journey. And it is a 6-month program that will be starting in September. So I have a wait list on my website if you're interested in signing up for that, or at least getting more information about that. I'll be having that 6-month container, yeah, starting in September, and we will go on a massive quest into the dark feminine and to freedom.
And I would highly recommend that because I took that course. It was a little different. You've adapted it since then. Mine was 3 months, mm-hmm. but
way too short.
I can honestly say, I mean, it was extremely transformational. And I've taken quite a few, you know, and we both have, like, I've taken quite a few programs and coaching things and stuff. And this was definitely one of the best that I have taken. So mm-hmm. highly recommend
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really mean it. And if people are interested in, so this podcast, so for your listeners, mm-hmm. this podcast, I do have discussions like every other week or every, you know, once a month at least with different people on varying topics. Honestly, it's not just kind of Jungian stuff. I think I'm talking to somebody about PCOS next week. Yeah. Who's a naturopathic doctor. Yeah, that I'm really excited about. But I also have very unique guided imagery meditations on here as well. So if you're interested in that, it's called, Take the Forest Path podcast, and it's on Spotify and it's also on Apple podcast. Yeah. I named it that because literally what we're talking about, like take the forest path, go into the subconscious, you can do it.
Not that I read that. Cause her brand is forest, mind, body, right?
Forest path, mind, body medicine. Yep.
And I didn't know that you took the forest path. Oh, that's so great. That's so great. So yeah. So the podcast is, a good place to find you. Is there anywhere else? I know you have a pretty amazing, really informative Instagram account.
I do. I have a pretty active Instagram account, which I love. I love to post on there. And so that one is dr.katarinaguzman. Are you able to write that down? Okay. That would
I'll
be great. Yes. And from there, you can also find my website. And I also do like Bella, a free discovery call. And I also have a newsletter where I love to kind of send resources and stuff. So if you go onto my website, which is forestpathmindbody.com, you can get onto my newsletter and get some interesting things there as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So awesome. Thank you so much, Bella. This was just awesome. And I love talking about this with you. And I'm really excited. I definitely want to talk about more with you in the future. So
Same. I wish we didn't get to our kind of meet cute, like how we really connected, but it's been such a amazing source of inspiration and also like sisterhood and safety. And so appreciate and love you.
I agree. Okay. So until next time.
If you would like to try Jungian mind-body coaching to address core conditioned patterns and pursuit of your best life, and or are interested in my burnout recovery program, check out my website in the description box and sign up for a free discovery call to learn more. I would love to meet and talk with you about your struggles, goals, and how we can work together to accomplish your dreams. Until next time, this is your host, Katarina, owner of Forest Path Mind Body Medicine.